This is Mae Brussel, the beginning part two, side two of broadcast number 691, March the 4th, 1985. Just one more thought about Banzer. A subscriber to the tape sent me an article from Washington Report. Bolivia, Banzer eyes the front door. If predictions bear out, the one-time rightist dictator, General Hugo Banzer Suarez, will enter government house, this time through the front door, with ample financial support from rightist business sector in Bolivia and elements of the Republican Party in Florida. Banzer is running a well-heeled media blitz to tout the Nationalist Democratic Party ticket that he needs. Now, that Republican money just didn't come from Florida. It came from the highest levels represented at the Republican Party, the former director of the National Security Council, which is a combination of the CIA, the Defense Department, the Defense Intelligence Agency. The Republican money is putting money into a man who ran these notorious death squads and also works closely with Klaus Barbie, of course, and one of the world's largest cocaine dealers. His opponents charge that he intends to obscure his unsavory record as a murderous dictator from 1971 to 78, a period in which Bolivia's huge cocaine trade flourished, repression ran rampant, death troubles mounted. Former Nazi war criminal Klaus Barbie brokered arms deals as a consultant to Banzer's military regime. Klaus Barbie and General Banzer both lived close to each other in Bolivia. Barbie hid under the name Klaus Altman until 1983. To thwart French extradition in 72, Banzer let Barbie two uniformed security guards and an official Bolivian passport. Eventually, he was issued an Army ID card that gave him the colonel's rank. As a weapons procurer for the military government, Barbie reportedly arranged a shipment to Bolivia of 100 Austrian light tanks in the mid-1970s. In addition, Barbie collaborated with Banzer in a bizarre scheme to establish two new cities in Bolivia's Amazon region by bringing in 30,000 white families from South Africa. The scheme was dropped after Banzer was deposed. Under Banzer, opponents of the military regime frequently met with swift extinction. Media spokesmen, labor leaders were regularly persecuted. Bolivian's human rights activists have charged that the regime jailed, tortured, and murdered hundreds of civilians. There is fascism at the GOP entertaining him, buying his time to get the elections down there going. And we'll talk more about buying dictators, about Jesse Helms, in 1 minute. Just to finish up this triumvirate of Mengele, Barbie, and DeLorean, I have so many pieces of news about DeLorean, but I just want to cite a few for them. A while back, not too long ago, there was an article, investors want to see records to find out where his money went, where DeLorean's money went. Then a long time ago, in 1983, I had on the air, investors accused DeLorean of fraud. This was a $396 million lawsuit. And this is the one that I believe started smoking out Mengele, because I called the person placing the lawsuit the attorney, and they were looking for that $17 million, a tremendous loss of money, $18.7 million, pardon me, and I mentioned at the time the connections. And I think behind the scenes, this is one of the things that began to smoke out Barbie, that they have to find Barbie. August the 20th, 1984, a little less than a year ago, I did a broadcast on the judge that was trying John DeLorean, Judge Robert M. Takasugi, and I made the point on that broadcast that he was appointed to the municipal court by Ronald Reagan, that President Gerald Ford had nominated him to the federal court before that, in 1976. This is the judge, Takasugi, that sent Larry Flint to prison and to a mental hospital and charged him $20,000 a day fine for not giving some information about DeLorean. And I also cited that Gordon Novell was put on the payroll of Larry Flint in his home, along with Mitchell Warbell, that Novell was a friend of DeLorean and planted tapes to Larry Flint, gave them to him so he would blow the case, that Novell was a suspect in the John Kennedy assassination wanted by Jim Garrison and worked with the World Commerce Corporation that Mr. Bill Donovan of the OSS set up, that Gordon Novell destroyed evidence at the time of Watergate and would have done more if they allowed him, that he was linked to letters to the jury telling them to these FBI stings don't work and had the name and address of the jury and his name was suspected as being a link. And the judge didn't end the trial because the jury was influenced by letters with a member of Congressman Edwards coming to them like as saying just practically blow the case. Well, Judge Takasugi was exposed for what he really is just about a half a year later. You know, sometimes my stories take 2 or 3 years. A long story. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, but this is from the Los Angeles Times, February the 10th, 1985. His real estate deals prove embarrassing to the United States judge. In an interview with U.S. District Judge Robert M. Takasugi, he was told of a foreclosure procedure involving his business associate. The judge said the signature on a land record bore his sign named. He tried to deny that. And this has to do, just to show you when the trial was going on, how the story breaks. While preparing to preside over the John DeLorean drug trafficking trial, U.S. District Judge Robert Takasugi got word that he might have to stand trial himself. Now, isn't that cute? He's under investigation. He's been appointed by Reagan and Ford. He's using Gordon Novell, who works with Reagan and Ford, to blow the trial, to let DeLorean off. They had to let DeLorean off. Maybe he would talk if it wasn't off. And this long article is about a business relationship he's had with a man over a period of years, a 20-year business relationship with a man named J. Marshall Uribe. And the article says, whose reputation is as bad as Takasugi's is good. And they buy homes. They began this relationship of buying homes for people and getting into various frauds, having them fixing up the houses and having people in them and defrauding them of money and maintaining a real conspiracy against some very large number of poor people and dealing them a raw break in Los Angeles. And these men met as far back as 1960. The article says Takasugi met Uribe in 1960 when he was practicing law in East Los Angeles, and he represented Uribe at a series of disciplinary hearings held at the State Department of Real Estate, of which Uribe was in trouble. Uribe had proposed a house swap with a client, took the client's home, promptly encumbered it with mortgage loans, sold his own house to someone else, and he has a cycle of problems. Now, this judge represented a man who was under questionable behavior at the time he met him and becomes his business partner, works himself up, appointed a judge by Gerald Ford, then a larger federal position by Ronald Reagan, and he tries John DeLorean, who's tangled with that other can of worms. Someday I'll give you the details on that trial, but I don't want to just emphasize the trial now. I want to go to more. Now, January 21st, just a month and a half ago, 1985, the Washington Post has a story on DeLorean's friend, criminal contempt charges imposed. A female financier from Virginia Hunt Country, who once offered to bail out the DeLorean Motors, was going to prison for 5 months for criminal contempt. She has assets down in Curaçao, a tax haven in the Dutch-ruled Caribbean islands, also known as the Netherlands Antilles, and is wanted for all kinds of investigations of financial acceptance of fees, grazing loans for people, and working in a money transfer operation, real estate and money transfer operation. And at the time DeLorean was in trouble, she claimed to have helped put up $10 million as part of a package to rescue his company, and she forwarded the final loan documents on the morning of October 19, 1982, the last day that the company could hold itself together. But instead of signing the agreement, DeLorean had boarded the airplane for Los Angeles and was arrested, charged with conspiring to arrange a $10 million cocaine deal. So she was going to give him $10 million, send that down to him the same day that he's going to arrange $10 million to get cocaine in Los Angeles. The Sunday London Times has a huge front-page story, February 17, 1985. DeLorean auditors sued for £245 million. I don't know what the pound is worth now. Let's say each pound's worth a dollar and not like at five it used to be. But on financial irregularities, they're trying to squeeze out where his money went. And again, would it have gone into the account of Joseph Mengele in Zurich, Switzerland? They keep searching it. They can sue him for $100 million. But the answer will be in that, I believe, in that Swiss account in Switzerland, because the sources of my information are very accurate. As a matter of fact, I talked to one of the gentlemen this week who had given me this information and worked on it for a long, long time. And he also told me that the fellow that worked with Mengele down in South America and Klaus Barbie, you had to call somebody on the telephone, and his name is Mr. Von Oven, which is typical. And Mr. Von Oven was the press secretary of Joseph Goebbels and was at the bunker with him up till the very end. I did give that to the Wiesenthal Institute. As long as they don't look for Goebbels' secretary, I was going to look for him. He may not be a war criminal. He just left the bunker. And you can't see Klaus Barbie or talk to Joseph Mengele, or you couldn't talk to Barbie or see either one unless you went through Mr. Von Oven, Wilfred Von Oven. So the DeLorean story is very much in the news. The Barbie story is the Mengele, and I think the three tie together. And then finally on that, there was an interview this week making himself very visible, Howard L. Weitzman, the attorney for DeLorean, who I've talked about many times. He said the legal system works. DeLorean attorney says the acquittal attributed to good lawyering, he calls it, and luck. I think it's attributed to good laundering and luck. That was February the 24th, 1985, where he's bragging about how the system worked and he got DeLorean off. But then 3 days later, the newspaper story comes out and says DeLorean's lawyer gets ranch as pay. So the system really works for him. He got the ranch, and DeLorean didn't get anything so far. I mean, maybe he'll keep it for DeLorean, but that's an interesting connection. Also, I might mention that Mr. Howard Weitzman represented members of the Manson family and the Grandma Mafia that I have brought up before, not too much on the Grandma Mafia, but a member of the Manson family. Well, the Grandma Mafia now links to the cocaine money or the political money of Mr. Daubuisson and Jesse Helms. We'll get to that in about 1 second. The connections of the men arrested taking the $5.4 million down to El Salvador, linked to Jesse Helms and Daubuisson. One more thing on DeLorean quickly that I might not have brought up. The Sunday Times, I've had a long time. This is November 84th. Bomb timer man flees after the police blunder. This is a man who is supplying bombs to the Arabs, Arab terrorists, and the Middle East, who works former director or manager for Lotus Cars. I don't remember if I mentioned that to you. Lotus Cars were the ones affiliated with the DeLorean motor, and this particular person was responsible for sending these weapons and time bombers and so forth under the guise, say, of the Lotus Car along with them or whatever, down to South America. When he was arrested, he walked out, which is typical. Now, here's a new story that you don't have. I got it from Charles Higham. He said I could put it first on the air because you haven't read it, heard it, seen it. He told me that the well-known Dr. Hermann Friedrich Urban was murdered in Vienna a few weeks ago. It didn't make any news story, although he was very much aware. Within a few seconds, he was alerted by people in Vienna. There hasn't been anything in the United States about Dr. Urban. Now, to refresh your memory, going back to 1983, I had a chronology of Dr. Hermann Friedrich Urban, the Nazi who joined the Nazi Party in the Gestapo, then came to San Francisco and was naturalized, and then went around and recruited Gestapo agents. And his name is particularly important because of his role of Errol Flynn, and Errol Flynn working with Ronald Reagan through the year, two movies, 1940 and 42, and the links and associations with Nazis. I think Urban rubbed off in more ways than one on Errol Flynn, but that's not the point. Urban was identified in a chronological order, and I have a sheet that went with that broadcast. If you don't have the tape and just want the sheet, again, write to me because it's a very important chronological order. But in that sheet, I had 1930, Dr. Urban came to the United States and became a citizen. And I've mentioned before my FBI document that the Wiesenthal Center negates. 1932, 2 years later, Mengele came to the United States and became a citizen. In 1936, Richard Nixon was writing to J. Edgar Hoover and wanting to be in the FBI and wanting to go to the law office of Mr. Donovan and be recruited, whatever Mr. Donovan had to offer in terms of law offices that later became the head of the OSS. But there's a correlation between these people that I'll develop for you later. But Urban is very important. And furthermore, on January the 28th, I shared this information about CBS put on a movie on Errol Flynn, that biography of Errol Flynn. And the broadcasting station, the CBS, according to the New York Times, said that they didn't want to get into politics. The reason they didn't mention Dr. Urban's name, his real name, and used an alias, Jarrett Coetz, K-O-E-T-S, is they didn't want to get in politics, even though since the rights to this story had been bought and sold, they wouldn't identify him. And I made a big issue on that particular broadcast this last January, just 5 weeks ago, about Dr. Urban. And in the New York Times, there was an article about Charles Higham's book on Errol Flynn and the Nazis. It's a very good book. You should really, it's a background book for people studying these conspiracies and matters. Flynn's own book, My Wicked, Wicked Ways, he went to great lengths to cover the name of his benefactor and friend, and he called him Jarrett Coetz also. And the CBS film calls him Dr. Coetz, but he moves him from Holland to Ireland. And that point is very interesting in this thing that goes across the country, if anybody cared to see it. And then when Charles did his work, he found out that Dr. Coetz, identified by Flynn, who wanted to hide it, was actually Dr. Herman Urban. And that was the gist and a great part of his book on the untold story of Errol Flynn by Charles Higham. And about Rudolf Stober had a comment in the New York Times. This is January the 16th, 1985. By CBS hiding the true identity of one particular character in a docudrama in which all other major characters are called by their correct names, it is not only misleading millions of TV viewers into thinking of Flynn's best friend as a harmless eccentric, it is also debasing the memory of all those who suffered under the Nazis. Now, that was January the 16th, 1985. February the 21st, Dr. Urban was dead in Vienna, and the area was marked off as roped off as if it was a murder. His sister-in-law lives in Vancouver. I have her number, and I might call her and talk to her. Charles Higham gave me her name. But no next of kin was notified about the death that took place. So New York Times identified Jarrett Coetz to an audience that is read more widely in some ways than Charles Higham's book. The book was it wasn't a bestseller. It was widely read, and it went into a paperback. But there's a different audience from Charles Higham's book to the New York Times. And when the New York Times printed the controversy of the CBS changing the name, it brought up a couple of issues about Dr. Urban, or why would you not tell his name? What was there to leave out? And then Charles Higham was interviewed for the New York Times. Now, Urban had been separated. He had a widow, divorced, not maybe legally divorced, but separated. She lives in London. She was not notified of his death. She heard about it 3 weeks later. She went to Vienna. He had quite a lot of money and belongings. There was a question of all the place being not torn apart by a burglary, but fingerprinted, and no information about where that went. And the whole area was surrounded. When she got there, the whole area was surrounded by police and powdered. And so it gave some feeble excuse for the way he died, treated it as a regular natural death, but they marked it off as a homicide. And the people who were writing about Urban, this Rudolf Stober, informed Charles Higham that he had worked with Urban doing a book, and Urban felt that maybe Stober had betrayed him. Just before the book was to come out, usually it's the author that's killed, this time the main character, but the main carrier was in Hollywood in the era and milieu of Ronald Reagan and Errol Flynn, so you're in a different element. And Stober was about, and he is coming out with the book. Now, after the war, he says there's more about Dr. Urban. One of the things I learned from Charles Higham is that Urban was involved in one of the largest world arms smuggling ring operations around the world. The locations are in Canada, and some of you researchers might want to go to the library and look this up. It's called the Space Research Corporation. Urban of the Gestapo. He's the fellow that I said was with Hermann Goering and Adolf Hitler and the Duke of Duchess of Windsor and Axel Wenner Grand and Errol Flynn's control. WCBH in Boston did a story on nuclear warheads being sent to South Africa to break the Rhodesian arms. Those were arms sent by Gestapo agent from Vienna and Canada, Dr. Urban. So we'll have to look up this story on the nuclear shipment to South Africa because he was involved in that. Dr. Gerald Ball went to prison for this. That was one of the fellows who was arrested for attempting to ship firearms to South Africa, but Ball's son is a protege of Urban from Vienna. These names don't sound, it's confusing because when it sounds like Ball is a good American like George Ball. Gerald Ball went to prison for this shipment. They may be good Americans, but he was a protege of Dr. Urban in Vienna, just as Errol Flynn was a protege of his in Hollywood and worked with him. He put him into medical school, the son of Gerald Ball, who was arrested for the attempt to send these nuclear weapons to South Africa to break up Rhodesia. He went to medical school in Austria, and Dr. Urban had transferred the entire organization that he had to Austria. Now, interestingly enough, among other places, they smuggle weapons, going to the Philippines and guns. And when Dr. Urban had his demise in Vienna, his body was sent to the medical school there. His wife wanted to see it, and they told her that it was cut up into various pieces for the anatomy class. He had two sons that joined the Waffen-SS that died during World War II, so this former wife, who lives in London, as I say, was notified 3 weeks later, and he had already been cut up into pieces for the anatomy class. So that's the end of Dr. Urban, and a good job of covering up all these years, thanks to people like Charles Higham and Mr. Strober in Vienna. The truth will come out, and they'll come closer to some of the people that are in office now than we want to believe, because all the connections of friends and contacts and social places where they all move, the milieu is identical. The most frightening news event I saw this past week was Jesse Helms holding up papers like the Fuhrer, ranting and raving about Dan Rather and CBS, identifying no longer are they communists. He's godless. He's un-American. They can't say they're leftists or socialists. Dan Rather is a non-believer, to paraphrase it, and shaking the papers and calling him by name. It's really scary to see that. And then now Ted Turner comes into the act. On his program, he has such newscasters such as Robert Novak, A Night of Malta with J. Peter Grace and the whole gang. You know what I mean by that. And Tom Buchanan, who is so conservative that he used to attack Reagan for being left. He now works for Ronald Reagan. And Tom Braden is a regular newscaster there, and he was one of the bigwigs into the intelligence community of the CIA in South America. So Ted Turner, these people I don't doubt could raise the funds, and I've mentioned this before. The Miami Herald has a story February the 7th that gives you an idea of how the news would go. It says, funds asked for film on alleged Soviet plot. Jesse Helms, the Republican from North Carolina, said that three Soviet labs are involved in the devilish germ warfare plot, that they're trying a horrifying new Soviet weapon, a mixing of flu virus and cobra snake genes. And a letter was circulated by the National Congressional Club's Coalition for Freedom that alleged the Russians were using genetic engineering to create silent, invisible killers. Soviet scientists are creating a new kind of flu, a bacteria, to mix the genes of snakes with common flu, and the result is a new strain that produces paralysis and death. The letter sought $55,000 to start production and $100,000 for TV time. So you can imagine the TV news. When Jesse Helms owns his own station, you'll get the creepies, because that's just a sample of what's going on. And as I say, Tom Braden was past head of the CIA's International Organization Division down in South America, worked for them, and was very much a part of the AFL-CIO group that infiltrated the labor movements and AILFLD, which was set up in 1962, AILFLD. Those are the letters for the organization under the AFL-CIO that did the spying and counterintelligence that assured or put into power the military dictatorships in South America. The Washington Post has a long story, February 17, 1985. The business section, Wall Street Sharks Watch Helms CBS Fight. Well, you watch it, but I'll bet he wins it. Now, about Jesse Helms and the news media, there was a convention of the right wing just this last week down, it was in Washington, I thought it was in the South, it was in Washington, and President Reagan was there, and they had booths supporting all their various causes, and Reagan held the freedom fighters down in Nicaragua as being members, brothers, you know, encouraged them to overthrow that country there and compared them to the founding fathers of the United States and brave men and women of the French Revolution. But the important thing was that they had pamphlets and a booth where they, among other things, they were trying to interest people in an area of the press coverage of Grenada. Media Mischief and the Misdeeds was a title of a book, and bumper stickers in praise of the media ban of the United States invasion of Grenada in 1983. And that is the first time in the history of America, going way back, that no newspaper accounts could account what was happening down there. And I still think it is allegations of mind control, not Russian, but American. And the convention, and I'm going to go back to that. I will rush through that for 1 minute. But that is media suppression at an official Pentagon level, and they're encouraging it while Jesse Helms, along with the CIA and the Defense Department and other people, want to buy over CBS. Now, many of you read the arrest that took place February 16th of the 9 suitcases that had $5.9 million worth of money in $100 bills. Daubuisson's associate arrested. That is the head of the death squads charged with, accused and suggested of ordering the killing of Archbishop Romero. You know who Daubuisson is. He's close to Western Goals and John Singlaub and the World Anti-Communist League and Jesse Helms. He had a friend leaving from California, of course, out of Los Angeles. He arrested in Florida with this kind of money, $5.9 million, that could be used because an election is coming up, just as the GOP and Richard Allen are throwing the millions into the election down in Bolivia, unlimited money to get their president back, Mr. Banzer, back into office there. Here's $5.8 million, and various articles have suggested that it came from the conservative United States to support because of elections that would be coming up soon down in El Salvador. Now, Mr. Duarte, the president of El Salvador, told the news media, it was in the Houston Post, I didn't see it in other papers, this came from another friend who religiously sends me 50 or 60 articles dated and clipped every single week from Houston Post. Duarte accuses Jesse Helms of tied to the cash smuggling ring that went down, that was arrested, that was supposed to go down to El Salvador. Senator Jesse Helms challenged President Jose Duarte to prove the allegation that he was responsible for giving this money to this close associate of Mr. Daubuisson. Mr. Guriola, who was arrested, is a close associate of the rightist leader, Mr. Roberto Daubuisson, who's in jail for $1 million bail in Miami or Corpus Christi. And the president of the country down there, El Salvador, is saying that the money links to Jesse Helms, and the Christian Democrats took out a full-page newspaper saying that the ultra-rightist Jesse Helms was supplying what he wanted, that he was trying to achieve, to pour this money in, achieving his desire, I guess, to affect, he says, the country's electoral processes, that the money is tied down there. Now, Jesse Helms allowed Mr. Daubuisson in the country. He entertained him. He approves of him. And this is a country where we do not allow the mothers and the families to get a passport. A visa was turned down for the parents of missing children and people to visit this country to speak about human rights. This is a country where up to 50,000 people have been killed in the past 5 years defending their human rights. And the State Department allows Major Roberto Daubuisson to be in the company of Jesse Helms and John Singlaub and the members of Western Goals and entertain in Washington, D.C., keeping one out and the other in, and the Republican Party funding these right-wing death squads. But it comes through a combination of the Central Intelligence Agency and the Defense Intelligence Agency and the GOP and Jesse Helms. And combined, These elements of fascism, going back to George Bush traveling with Reverend Falwell or Pat Robertson, they all have interconnecting links. The vice president going with them to the death squads, to the terror in Central America, now over the Sudan, traveling around and approving of each other's actions. It's terribly dangerous, and they're tightening the control of the media. Imagine a convention in Washington where there's bumper stickers, keep the press out of military invasions. What can happen if we do that? And imagine pushing this as being something that is very recognizable and very fine. And time is running out, so I have to hurry now and continue the stories later. Daniel Graham walked out of a conference on the Star Wars because they revealed evidence that it was going to be a first strike attack to start World War III. And Edwin Meese wants a constitutional convention, and the purpose of that, of course, is to make Henry Kissinger president. I'll do the details on those, but the hour is running out. The stories are tremendous, and they all build and tie together to a hypothesis I've had for a long time. This is Mae Brussel. It's Pacific Grove. I'm in Pacific Grove, California, and I'll be back with you next week.